Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, and with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, all made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I'm joined today by the lovely Marissa, who I'm going to be hanging out with in Miami. I'm so excited. Marissa, welcome to the podcast, and would love for you to just introduce yourself for any listeners who might not have the pleasure already.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tiggy. I'm excited. Nice. I feel like we have crossed paths at races before, but never actually like fully sat down and had a nice long conversation. So this will be very fun. I am a content creator, podcaster, writer, sports person. I cover all sports, so not just Formula One. And my big thing is trying to cover sports from a focus where whether you feel like you're not a part of sports for any reason, whether that's because of gender or because of just like not feeling like you understand them or you're tuned into them or not welcome, making it clear that like 90% of the people that are making you feel like you don't know everything also don't know everything. Yeah. And that it's such a fun place to be a fan. So that's, I mean, I grew up playing sports my whole life. I love sports. And that's really why I make content in general. So yeah, that's me.
I love that. That certainly resonates a lot with us on this podcast, trying to make space for people who haven't necessarily had the space made for them in the past. And I think the educational piece, that's what I love so much about your content. It's, I think, a similar bend that we try to take. I feel like you're very balanced, very thoughtful, very measured, and very educational and informative. So kudos to all the amazing content you've been putting out.
I appreciate it.
Yay. Okay, so Bahrain, I thought it was a refreshing race and a refreshing track after the sort of processional of Suzuka where not a lot happened. But Marissa, where were you watching from and what were your thoughts on this race?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was 8 a.m., which sounds like it's not a great time, but better than things have been lately. So I was happy with an 8 a.m. call, you know. I watched from my couch in my PJs.
Love. I know. I watched from my bed in my PJs as well. The nice thing is we're both on Pacific time, so I love that.
I'm jealous of people who can stay in bed and not fall back asleep because I've noticed I sleep with like a weighted blanket, and if I don't get out from underneath the weighted blanket when the alarm goes off, it's toast. Game's over. Yeah, we're back asleep. You're like, how did it become noon o'clock? I don't know.
But here we are. Yeah. I know. And luckily, it was an exciting enough race that it kept me awake. So thank you to Formula One for that. And thank you to the Bahrain International Circuit with all of its drama. So we'll dive into all of that. But we always do a little bit of a rundown of the news or the headlines heading into the weekend. So only two main things from my perspective on this. But I think the first was that the FIA deputy president of sport, Robert Reed, announced his resignation. He was the number two to Ben Sulayem, the president of the FIA. And he cited concerns over decisions being made without due process. He said that when he joined, he wanted to serve the FIA's members, not power, and basically made all these insinuations alluding to the fact that, there's something going on at the top that is not quite sitting right with him. So Marissa, what did you think of the of that news?
I have to be honest with you. I was like, things with the FIA have always been sort of questionable, right? It's never necessarily been as much of a clear-cut regulatory body as other sports have. And we talk a lot about this when it comes to like fines for drivers in general. And I know that was a hot topic last week with Carlos Sainz and his bathroom break issue and his fine there. And one of those things is the fact that we don't know where those fines go. And that is really different than literally any other sport. When you talk about like the NFL, portions of it go to charity, portions of it go to a fund for players that may find themselves in the future needing help. And so that is one of those things where I look at all the other sports I cover and all the other sports I've been a fan of for so long. And you look at these technicalities with like the NBA, the NHL, NFL, MLB, WNBA, everybody knows where those fines that they're paying are going. And it's also really clear cut as to why those fines are happening. And so as we've continued to kind of see that conversation stretching from last season and the control of the drivers overall by the FIA and that as a regulatory body, the way that it's working, it's very interesting because now you have someone who literally is right at the top with the ability to make those changes saying, I don't think it's possible to fix this system.
From the inside. Like, right. Which is a crazy statement and a crazy just place that we're in with the regulatory body of the sport. And when you have drivers like George Russell, who is one of the leaders, so to speak, of the GPDA, the Grand Prix Drivers Association, kind of speaking out against this as well, and others have in the past, I think there's definitely the drivers are not happy with the state of play. And I always wonder how much power drivers have over some of these things. It doesn't seem like they've wielded a ton of power in the past, but maybe that will change as we start to see the cracks show internally at the FIA and the elections are coming up. I know a lot of people are talking about wanting Susie Wolf to be the head of that, but that would probably be a conflict of interest, I would imagine, with Toto in the seat that he's in, but maybe not. I don't know.
You know, the thing someone said when that first came out, everyone was like talking about this conflict of interest aspect. And then someone also said, I think quite literally every part of Formula One is a conflict of interest.
It's a conflict of interest.
So at this point, you know what? Let her do it. Let her cook.
Yeah. Let Susie cook. Okay. We'll see how that plays out or continues to play out. The other piece of news was this V10 summit. So there have been whisperings over the desire for F1 to return to V10 engines, which we haven't had in some years. In 2021, we switched to the V6 hybrid engine, which a lot of people have been bemoaning is not giving the same sound, not giving the same feel as the good old days. And so there was sort of a push to get these V10s back. Now, not a lot of details around how that would actually work with the new regulations. Those are supposed to be in place with a 50-50 hybrid ICE engine from 2026 to 2030. And so there was potentially a push to get V10s earlier than 2030. But the results of that meeting, at least this weekend, were that there are not going to be V10 engines until at least 2029. So it's leaving the door sort of slightly ajar, but I think part of the pushback or hesitancy there is the engine manufacturers that Formula One has enticed to come back into the sport or come into the sport, Honda being one of them, Audi being another, I think have really pushed for this electric or hybrid side of the engine because it matches more what they're doing with their road cars and has more road relevancy. So you have to be careful about pushing those people away that you just kind of brought back into the fold. So I think that's part of it. But there are certainly some teams, I think Ferrari, Christian Horner has been vocal about wanting the V10s. There are certainly teams pushing for that, but it sounds like it's not anytime soon.
Yeah, I think your point about the road cars is like a really good one and a good sort of connection to what's going on in just current car market behavior. We saw BMW, which is not related to Formula One at the current time, but their entire M line, which is sort of their performance drive line of cars. You can get like the regular version of the car, you can get a step up of that, and then you can get the M performance car, which is supposed to be sort of like the closest to a race car you can drive as a person on the street, not racing. Far more power than you would ever need, whatever. But we just saw them change their entire M line to plug-in hybrids. And part of that has to do with the restrictions in the US and in California in particular, as to what car manufacturers are allowed to do based off of the changes that we've made with the intention of changing things for the environment and our carbon emissions. So there are a number of cars that will be required to be hybrids or electric in some capacity. And that applies to everyone, not just BMW, obviously. Yeah. So when you're talking about manufacturers like Honda, manufacturers like Mercedes, and manufacturers like even Cadillac coming in and Ford coming in, yeah, in the ways that they're coming in, there's a direct change that they're currently trying to make to their own cars that you, like you said, are going to essentially, yeah, force them to uninvest in.
You can't have like two completely different factory or production lines, like one for all of your normal cars and then just this little building that's supposed to be building a Formula One engine that has like no relevancy to the rest of what you're building. I feel like long term, those things do have to converge in some way, shape, or form. And look, maybe you'll always have companies or car manufacturers or energy drinks that are willing to kind of put their resources towards something that's maybe not road relevant, but I think at some point those things will converge more and more. But we'll see.
I will say, did you see Toto's point about this, about the engines being too loud for the new demographic of fans? Which was a hot take, Toto, if I've ever heard one.
Come on, King. I love Toto, but we also like noise.
Yeah. I love noise. I also think that it's a sign that Mercedes has a strong power unit for the new regulations and, yeah, they don't want to change it. But yes, I did find his take that pointing to a certain demographic of change, it'll be too loud for their delicate ears, was
an interesting scapegoat of a reasoning.
It's like, it's definitely not about what we've built. It's about the sensitive ears of the new fans.
So funny. Yeah, I mean, I've said this for a while. I think Mercedes has always had really good track record when it comes to new regulations, or at least in the past, obviously the 2010s decade, and they did okay with the 2021 regulations, not incredibly, but I think I have my money on them to have a really strong power unit for 2026.
Agreed.
That checks out. Yeah. Okay, let's get into the race. We'll do a little bit of an in case you missed it for practice quali in the race, and then we'll dive into all of the amazing discussion points that there were. So for practice, not a ton to highlight, except that FP1 had a lot of rookies take part. So a quick note on this, teams have to run rookies in 4 practice sessions throughout the season. Some teams already did get away with their rookies in full-time seats satisfying that if their drivers hadn't taken part in a certain number of Grand Prix. So Kimi, for example, satisfied, I think, at least 2 sessions for Mercedes. And then this one in Bahrain, they only have to do 1 more throughout the season. So some teams got a little bit lucky with that, but a lot of teams used Bahrain to run rookies. There's not really a ton of highlights besides that. McLaren swept the practice sessions. Either Oscar or Lando was topping the timesheets for all 3. Oscar did say FP1 felt a little bit like rally car, which I thought was funny. But yeah, pretty standard practice sessions besides the rookies. And I don't think any of those rookies finished in the top 10, but Marissa, did anyone catch your eye or anything from practice catch your eye there?
Not really. It was one of those weeks where it was almost like, I was like, man, I guess I could have skipped this. You know what I mean? Yeah. I watch all the sessions every time, and every once in a while, someone's like, why? And I'm like, you know what? This week, I don't
know. You never know. Yeah, exactly. Not a ton to report. So for quali, this was under the lights, windy. The drivers really had to focus on getting their tires, I think, in the right temperature window. Track limits was a big topic of conversation, and the track just kind of got faster and faster as it got rubbered in throughout. So Q1, we had some knockouts there. Albon, Lawson, Bortoleto, Stroll, and Berman. This was a little bit stressful watching the Red Bulls, especially. They had still not put a flying lap time in with a minute to go because Yuki's time had gotten deleted. And so I don't know about you, but I was really stressed watching that.
Second week in a row that, yeah, I was like, I guess we'll just wait until we feel like it. I don't know, yeah, but...
Like, what are you doing? I know Max had been complaining about the car and he had to go back into the pits to deal with some car issues. But yeah, it's like the heart rate there.
Yeah. To be fair, I think Yuki's time was deleted after he had already come in to the pits. So yeah. I don't know that it was last week we saw him essentially intentionally only be given time to get 1 lap in and find himself at the wrong end of that. This time it felt like they thought he was fine. And so they brought him in And then obviously his lap time got deleted. But
yeah,
luckily they both scooted on by.
They did. And two Red Bulls in Q3 for the first time in quite some time. So that was nice. The other low light, I guess, of Q1 was Albon, who was on a 3 out of 3 Q3 and point streak, but he had a lockup that lost him, I think, 0.2 seconds when he locked up on that last flying lap. It was the first time Sainz outqualified him. But the real bummer, and Marissa, you did a hilarious video on this about how his qualifying got Hulk smashed. Please explain.
So we see Alex put in that lap. It's obviously not a great lap. It just barely keeps him in 15th. And then Nico Hülkenberg comes flying around and outqualifies him for that session. However, normally when you see a track limits violation, it's done quite quickly and there's no issue. We did not see Hülkenberg get called for a track limits violation until 45 minutes after Q1 was over, which means that I just really don't understand. There are tons of things where it's like, I'm sure we'll get into different aspects of this race where it's a question that we don't know the answer to the call as to why it would have taken the amount of time where you make this certain call because we're not in the steward's office. This one is like the most cut and dry issue. Yeah. And it's a track where track limits happens pretty quickly. It's a track where, like you said, Yuki had just had his lap deleted. They were able to delete Yuki's lap, but nobody caught this one. So you have Nico compete in Q2 when it should have been Alex. And Alex ends up getting 15th when he could have at least had 14th. There's just so many things about it that affect the race in a really bad way.
Totally. And it was such a bummer, especially given the streak he was on. Just 3 for 3 on that. So that was too bad. The other bummer was Liam Lawson, who had a DRS issue on his last flying lap. So he hasn't had quite as good of a track record into getting out of Q1, but that was too bad that it was a technical issue that prevented him from potentially moving forward.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for Liam that we see him by a certain couple more races once the pressure and the conversation has kind of died down, that those types of things are less of an issue. Because like you said, it was a technical issue, but obviously it's always hard when it's a technical issue, but you only had it on one lap where if you had been performing a little bit better, it wouldn't have mattered. Same thing for Alex, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, it always happens right when you need it to not happen. So for Q2, the major incident here was Ocon crashing and the red flag there. As horrible as that was, it was really nice to see Laura and hear Laura's voice on the radio. I'm hoping for more coverage from her. As a reminder, she's the first female race engineer in Formula One history. She's Ocon's race engineer and she's been crushing it. And we'll talk about Ocon's performance today, which was wonderful. So kudos to him and to Laura.
Laura has such a calm energy too. Yeah. Like Ocon crashes and she's like, are you good?
Are you okay?
Let's move on. I love it.
I know. But for Q2 knockouts, we had Jack Doohan, Isaac Hadjar, Hülkenberg, Alonso, and Ocon. It was the first time where we had two Red Bulls, like I said, in Q3. So that was exciting. Max was doing some complaining about the car and the brakes not working in Q3. It seemed like the Red Bull had a tough time this weekend, which of course we'll get to in the results from the race. But Max was not a happy camper for most of the weekend. There were a lot of lap times deleted in Q3. One of Kimi's got deleted. Lewis's got deleted. Some others. This is kind of a punishing track because there aren't walls and it's quite fast. And so I think it's kind of easy at certain turns to just go off. But our finishing order our starting order, I guess, after Q3 was Oscar Piastri pole, his second career pole. And that I think was his 50th Grand Prix start. So very fun for him, especially after the birthday race that didn't go quite as well as he wanted to last weekend. Then we had George Russell, who continues to just perform. Leclerc, Antonelli, Gasly, Norris, Verstappen, Sainz, Hamilton, and Tsunoda. But notably, after that quali and that finish order, Russell and Antonelli were dropped a place for being released prematurely under the red flag, which was kind of an uncharacteristic mistake. The announcer called it quote unquote boring admin, which I thought was funny. But like, I guess fair if you're not following the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kimi and Jack Doohan had their best starts of the year, which was fun to see for them. Jack Doohan showed a lot of promise, I thought, this weekend, and it didn't really work out super well during the race and didn't convert to points, but Alpine is finally on the board, which was good. It was also Max's worst start to the season, so, or worst start to the race.
Gosh, yeah, it really was, wasn't it? It was for him. I do believe they changed his brake pads or brake something after between qualifying and the race itself. So I do think there was a proper issue with that. And obviously we'll get into the race elements of it itself. But yeah, I was really, I will say with Oscar, you pointed out the birthday thing. I've noticed with him, there's like this, every time he has like a proper success, it's preceded by something that should have been really good.
like Australia.
There's something that could have been really nice. He could have had a really nice day. something ruins it. And then the next week he's like, you know what?
We're coming back. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, maybe this is prematurely getting into some discussion, but it seems like the proper time to discuss. What do you think about Oscar versus Lando? And do you think Oscar has a real shot at the championship? And will McLaren give him the opportunity to do so if he's putting himself in the right position? I know a big question, but
it's a great timing for this because right before we got on for this, I just finished recording Grid Chat I had to go through all of this. So it's like very top of mind.
Fresh.
And so many hot takes this week have been, I don't know what anti-Lando corner of the internet I find myself in, but people are really kind of trashing him this week. And I think it's an issue that Formula One has, though, where it's like the other weeks don't matter. All that matters is what literally just happened a second ago. Yeah. And I think Oscar and Lando both have the capabilities of becoming a world champion. What I don't know is what that looks like when they're teammates. I think they would be far better off on separate teams to some degree. But at the same time, I also think Oscar performing at the level that he is what is making Lando perform better. Yeah. I think Lando needs that. I think he needs someone kind of breathing down his neck and people telling him that there's someone doing better than him and that he doesn't deserve it to get into that mindset to prove them wrong, versus Oscar doesn't necessarily need the competition of it, but performs as best he can and has a lot of promise.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a good point. And I think part of me also wonders, if they didn't have each other on the same team, like, would they be able to, not that McLaren has aced the strategy this season, but would they be able to use each other up front in ways that are helpful and would hopefully propel them to a world championship? Not everybody is Max Verstappen and can do that kind of by himself out front. And so there is, I think, some degree of it being helpful that they're both at such a high caliber and, to your point, like, able to push each other in ways. Mm-hmm. But I do worry a lot about some of the mistakes that Lando has been making. I just feel like he's shown a lot of really great promise. It was unfortunate that he was outside of his grid box at the start, because that start was like, I thought, the perfect counter to all of these people saying like Lando doesn't have the material it takes to be world champion, because that start was incredible. And even the announcers were just so amazed. Unfortunate again that it ended up being a penalty, but still, I don't know how much like that roll forward helped him on the start. So,
yeah, I think also the penalty didn't affect him so deeply that it wasn't that it negated how good the start was to some degree.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know. I think Lando for me really does have the capability to be a champion. And I think when you listen to the way that he talks about the mistakes that he makes, there is a marked difference from last season and this season. Last season, so much of his energy was very self-deprecating, is not the right word, because he wasn't laughing, but very kind of down on himself in general and always kind of harping on his own mistakes, versus this week when you listen to him talk about his differences between where he struggled with qualifying and coming into the race. He talked about staying late at the racetrack and trying to understand from the data what he was doing wrong and make those adjustments. Yeah. And I think we did see those adjustments in the race itself. And I think it's hard to say, because I don't know that we've seen Oscar undergo the same level of both pressure and the same level of falling back and returning from it. We've seen really good moments from Oscar, but Oscar really performs as long as he qualifies well.
Yeah, That's a great point. There was a lot of chat in our Discord this week about how Lando has been, I guess, uncharacteristically for F1 drivers, very open about the pressure and the toll that that takes on mental health. And he just seems to be of our generation almost in terms of being open about speaking about mental health and some of the difficulties he's had. And I think a lot of people maybe take that as a sign of weakness, which they shouldn't, because it's certainly not weak to be struggling with certain mental issues when you have this much pressure on you at all times. But just being open about it, I think, is refreshing. And I respect Lando for being able to do that, even if it comes at the price of people thinking that he doesn't have what it takes, because I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think what a great story it would be for that element of speaking up about that and how you feel if he does actually pull it out without having to change that aspect of himself. I think it'd be nice.
100%. All right. So for the race, I felt like this race was all about tire and pit strategy. It was like a one-stop versus a two-stop versus soft, mediums, hards, like which tire would be in the right window and how could you make the tires work? And of course, we'll get to George's last stint on those softs. But yeah, it was a lot about strategy, which is always fun to think about in a race when it's not super straightforward and everybody's kind of on different strategies, which is fun to compare and contrast. There were a lot of tech issues this race and like things just going on. Someone put in the question box on Instagram, like, can you talk about how it was giving, F1 was giving like school project where everything goes wrong? And I'm like, kind of fair. Both Red Bulls had issues with their pit stops with the LED light system. They just like wouldn't go off red. So the cars didn't know to go. George's timing transponder wasn't working. So he was running in second, but the timing sheets were showing him in 20th. And then they just gave up on the timing sheets altogether. He had DRS issues. He lost the dash. Then he was having gear issues. And then I think the announcers were calling it like a gremlin that he was dealing with. There was just a lot going on. And then I thought it was so funny when Lando's engineer on the radio was told that he can only use DRS when he's 100% sure he's within it because they don't have the timing. It's all just
George's car. I literally was like, I said to someone, by the end of this race, George will be running his car like a Flintstone car. Like it's fully falling apart. Every moment they're like, hey, by the way, at a certain point, we think your mirrors are going to fall off and we hope you know how to make that work.
Yeah, he was even joking about the steering wheel when they were saying that he was going to lose the dash. He's like, well, as long as it doesn't fall off.
And it's like, you know what, George, it could. I think you should not speak that into existence.
I was amazed he held on to P2. Absolutely amazed. Like, same. I really thought that he was going to lose that. So really impressive. He was noted for opening his DRS at the wrong time. And then he was investigated after the race, which I was a little worried about turning into an issue or a penalty. But I think given all the issues that the Mercedes car was dealing with and the fact that he didn't really gain any sort of sporting advantage from it, meant that the FIA agreed that it didn't deserve to be a penalty. So I was happy for him on that.
The one thing I thought was wild about that is if you read the document, essentially what happened was that the button that he pressed doubles as both the radio message and the manual DRS flap opener. And I was like, who
thought of that?
It's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think it's his fault. For the first time, I'm like, I'm very much about like, you know, penalize across the board in the same way. And sometimes it seems like certain drivers do not get penalized for things that other drivers would get penalized for. But you know what? If it is genuinely you guys made the same button, that's like making the button for like call and hang up the same. Like why?
Who thought of that? It's probably the one that has the WhatsApp logo on it too.
Literally. He was like, please, hello, help.
He's lost everything. Yeah, I'm really glad that that did not turn into a penalty for him for his sake. But I thought overall, pretty good race, good racing. There were a lot of good battles and overtakes up and down. So that was the good news. Kimi passing Max, I thought was chef's kiss. That was amazing. We saw some really daring overtakes on the outside, a lot of lunging going on. I don't know if you watch on F1 TV or ESPN,
yeah.
But
F1 TV, yeah.
Lunge-tastic was like the favorite word of this race by David Coulthard, I felt.
Yes. Yeah. So funny to the point that like other commentators were like, dare I say, like maybe a lunge, will you say it? Will you say lunge-tastic again?
They're pretty funny. But maybe going very quickly chronologically. So insane start from Russell and from Norris. It was a rough start for Charles, who dropped from P2 to P4. He and Lewis were both on mediums and everyone else was on softs in the sort of top 10-ish. Ollie Berman made up five places from P20 to P15, like on the opening lap, which was crazy. Yeah. We'll talk about his performance. But that was when Lando then was noted for a false start for being out of position. And it turns out, ever the eagle eye and ever the tattler, it was Max Verstappen who noted it. It was so funny in our Discord. People, before they showed Max's or they put up Max's radio, they were like, I bet you anything, Max Verstappen tattled. And he just like, he has a crazy eye. I don't know how he knows this. Like,
sometimes I think with him, it's also specifically with Lando. It always feels like, because the two of them are such good friends off track and then such really recent rivals on track, it almost feels the two of them with their radio, same last week in Suzuka. It is just like two teenage boys trying to get the other one in trouble.
And it's so funny because they're such good friends. Like, it's absolutely wild. So Lando did get a 5-second penalty for that. After all, he served it in the pits and it actually ended up sort of being a non-issue. I wonder without that 5-second penalty where he would have been. He probably would have been on podium a little higher maybe, but maybe it would have been a 1-2. I don't know. But all in all, not super bad. There was a safety car on lap 32 and that allowed Piastri and then a bunch of others to pit kind of with perfect timing. They did put Russell on softs at this point, which is when his radio was like, 24 laps on softs? That's pretty audacious. Like, only George would use that word in the middle of driving like 250 miles an hour.
Yeah, someone in our race chat said he speaks like an author while he's driving 300 miles an hour. And I think it's so, to some degree, true, but also almost like a little quirkier than an author, because you get like something as dorky as Yabba Dabba Doo and then something as like so specific as pretty audacious. And they're all in high stress situations.
Yeah. Do you think he rehearses this off track when he's not in high pressure situations to make sure that that's what comes out and it's not like this string of swear words that everybody else has?
You know what? He's
like built a brand at this point.
I just think, if you want me to be honest, I really think that is how George speaks. Like, I think that is not like holding back anything. I think that's him when like he really feels like the kind of guy who says golly and means it, you know? And I think it 100%. Sounds so specific because he's British. Like, I think if you were thinking sort of like Midwestern boy in America, it would be similar if we if we had it.
Just like a good Midwestern boy.
Yeah.
Gosh darn. I agree. But I also feel like he probably leans into it at this point. He knows that it's very memeable. And it's kind of like his intro pose again for the F1 credits where he does the sort of like arms out thing. I feel like he knows what to lean into.
Yeah.
But I also agree that he's probably just, that is who he is. And that is how he talks.
I will say on the T pose, he wrote on his little, you know, they did the F1 like school thing. I thought it said retire the T-pose and it must have said return the T-pose.
Oh.
And I was I was like, no, I was really excited to retire that one. I'm over it. It was funny.
Certainly not retired.
I'm desperate for a new pose. George, if you're listening, please, we want like a circle, like a champion pose, anything.
YMCA, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe a G. I'd even settle for a proper
G. A proper G. No, just wait. He's going to win a race at some point, and he will be doing that pose. He knows when to hit it.
Yeah.
Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language opens up incredible opportunities, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. I've been on a French learning journey for years, and I'm gearing up to go to the Monaco Grand Prix this year, so I'm trying to improve as much as possible before that. But one of the hardest things can be perfecting pronunciation. But Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound much more natural. It's like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might actually not be Ferrari strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I personally took the quiz, and one of the recommendations I got was to start Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, fatigue, weight gain, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. So after that safety car, I guess this was another question people had, is why it was a full safety car instead of a virtual safety car. And I still don't fully know.
I think there wasn't a ton of debris. Honestly, I think it must have been, my criticism of this broadcast is we missed so much action because there was so much action. So they just couldn't seem to, and to be fair, like some of that timing issue was with George's transponder and those issues, but we missed so much actual racing action this week, and whatever it was that had to be cleared was just never specified. And it seemed like the broadcasters were also unclear as to what caused it. The only thing that I can think is that there was something on the actual racing line that could have been more dangerous than just your standard debris situation that caused a full safety car. But still, it seemed like in the moment, nobody knew why. And also, we never got an answer.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of bizarre, but I guess I err on the side of like better safe than sorry. It allowed for some fun free pit stops for people. It all was fine. And it also gave us an exciting restart between the Ferraris and Lando. So that was a fun moment. I enjoyed that racing. We should probably talk about the Sainz penalty because this is all kind of wrapped up in that. So Sainz got a 10-second penalty for forcing a car off track, which Yuki was implicated in this whole situation. And he had a huge hole in his bodywork, had to retire. And a lot of people, I think, are questioning whether Sainz deserved that. It felt like quite a harsh penalty, and people thought that maybe it was Yuki who should have been investigated on that as well. But Marissa, do you have thoughts on that whole debacle?
My thought is that the call was probably right as to who was at fault, but 10 seconds was severe.
Harsh.
So it felt like it should have been a 5-second penalty if that was the case, or I don't know. It felt like, based on what we saw, it did seem like Carlos's fault, but it also felt like 10 seconds was a little wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully agree. I think a lot of people, there are a lot of Yuki fans too, for sure. But I think a lot of people are just really wanting Carlos to succeed. And this weekend felt like a good opportunity for him to potentially be up there and fighting for points, his first points with Williams. So it was really a bummer that he had to retire and was the only one who had to do so.
Yeah, so. I will state my bias that I really am hoping that Yuki performs well. Same. Because of the pressure level that's there, not even just because I like Yuki, but just because of how much of a situation it's been versus Carlos. I'm like, next week will be your week. You'll be fine. Yeah. You know, this was really important.
And Carlos knew when he signed with Williams that he really needed to be playing the long game. Like, first of all, totally new team, power unit he's never used in his entire career, despite having driven for half the teams on the grid. And yeah, I think just knowing that Williams is more of a longer term investment or a project, like they're not delivering a car that can be fighting for podiums at this point, although maybe we'll see at some point. Alex has been driving pretty well. But yeah, I agree. I think Sainz's time will come. I hope it's sooner rather than later. But I do really want Yuki to succeed. I think even just to prove the whole Red Bull second seat curse wrong.
Exactly. I'm like, just let him have like a couple nice weeks, and then the conversation will have died down, and that's all that matters in general. Yeah,
100%.
So yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Last, I think, major highlight from the race was the huge pass from Norris to take P3 from Charles, which was another lunge-tastic moment. And then George just having to fight for his life on this Flintstone car, as you put it, and trying to get to the end on those softs and hanging on. So in the end, we had Piastri, Russell, and Norris on podium. And then that was followed by Charles, Max, Gasly, who got his first points, Ocon, Yuki, his first Red Bull points, and then Ollie Berman, which brought in a double Haas points situation. This was really nice for Haas, for sure, but also for McLaren. It was a home race, kind of second home race, as they called it. They're owned by the Bahrain Sovereign Wealth Fund. So I thought it was actually kind of funny that Oscar kept talking about this party that he's not going to be partaking in, but he's like, we're going to have a huge party tonight.
But not me. I'm going
But
home.
Not me. I have to race next week. Just putting that out there.
Which also begs the question, what kind of party requires a full 5-day recovery period that you're afraid to go to?
And also, like, can we just talk about how your teammate got his first win in Miami after like the most insane partying in Amsterdam and a cut nose and like the whole thing? Oscar, you can live a little. It's okay.
But you know what? I think that is that response, and also Oscar's general demeanor, I think, is part of this conversation as to why there's such a split as to which McLaren driver you personally think might be more championship material. I think some people look at Lando, even though Oscar is younger, Lando comes off as a younger person. There's more of that party boy kind of, I always refer to it as frat boy energy, but they don't really have frats in England where he grew up, but he fully gives it. Like, if you dropped him in a state school and told him to hang out with a bunch of frat boys, he'd be fine.
He would thrive. He would do,
quite frankly, I think he'd do great. Like, if I were picking a beer pong partner, Lando's on the list. But I think sometimes people, even from like, you have this sort of like soft, sensitive, but also frat boy energy from Lando, where he can do that party and break his nose and then win his first race in like one of the party capital races, versus Oscar is so, even when he wins, it sounds sort of like a business deal. Like, all right, that one's done. Let's move on. And I think that's part of where that divide comes from. Like, do you think you have to be this serious, serious person who treats your body like a temple and won't do anything other than win? Or can you have a little fun and be a little emotional?
Yeah, it's super interesting. On the Lando side, I talked about that a lot when Drive to Survive came out this season, because I felt like they were torn in between those two versions of Lando. Not that he can't be both, like there is duality of a man, but they were, I thought, having a hard time with how to portray him in terms of, yeah, being a little bit more emotional, calling his mom after his win, and then the sort of party boy, bad guy vibe. I think they I don't know, Lando is sort of caught between those two tropes in a way. And to your point, Oscar is very much like straight down the middle. And maybe that's just who Oscar is. Mm. But if that's not who Oscar is and he's repressing the urge to have fun, I want him to know that it's okay. Like yeah. He can.
One day. And maybe again, if they were on different teams, they could help each other out with both aspects of that. You know, every once in a while, Lando might need to take a night off and Oscar might need to be forced like out of his little dorm room and head to the party and do a keg stand. You know, if you want to,
get Oscar on a keg stand.
Only if you want to. First.
No peer pressure. Yeah. No peer pressure. But Oscar, if you want to, if you're repressing that, please, it's okay.
Yeah. We won't tell anyone. Keep it private.
Yeah. Last race update after the fact was Hülkenberg, who had just a very rough weekend overall after his quali lap time was deleted. He was then disqualified from the race for a skid block breach, which is exactly what happened to Hamilton a couple races ago. So, yeah. Tough.
Yeah. Rough week for him. I hate a disqualification in general because I'm always like, gosh, I wish you just hadn't bothered. You know, like it's so much work and so much intention to essentially just have it not count.
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more of the skid block issue recently. I feel like over the past couple of years, we saw the same issue for both Hamilton and Leclerc in 2023 at the USGP. Then obviously we had it again with Lewis a couple races ago, and now we have it again with Hülkenberg. So that ride, that closeness to the ground really continues to be an issue.
Yeah, it's such a balance of you want to run your car low to the ground, especially on some of these tracks, but yeah, you don't want to risk the skid block being 1 millimeter too thin, and then you've wasted an entire weekend. It's just, it's really upsetting. Yeah. Sucks. All right, let's dive into MVPs. Marissa, who was your MVP of the race?
My MVP was Ollie Bearman. That was just, honestly, you look at it and you're like, he comes in with a little bit of pressure, like having had such a good performance when he filled in for Carlos last year, and then we really haven't heard much from him, and then you just have this absolute rip of a race. I was so proud of him. And so was his dad on the radio.
I love seeing his dad in the garage. I love when they flash to him. I've loved it since he started subbing in last year, and his dad has sort of become a main character in the paddock in and of himself. So I love that for him. But I totally agree. Ollie Bearman has been really impressive. There are some rookies who are shining a lot, and I would put Ollie up there. I would put Kimi up there. I would put Isaac Hajar up there. Some of the others have been a little quieter, but that's not to say that they don't have what it takes. They just may be in cars that are a little bit more difficult to handle.
Yeah. And it might take a little bit more time to adjust, which is fair, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Speaking of cars that are difficult to handle, I think I got to give my MVP to Pierre Gasly. First points on the board for Alpine and just incredible weekend all around. He was really, I know practice doesn't mean much, but he was really up there in FP1, then qualified really well, had a great race in a car that maybe isn't as easy to drive and easy to handle. So kudos to Gasly for being up there and getting Alpine on the board.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm glad he was your MVP because he's one that had such a great race that just got lost in how intense it was.
I know. I think to your point of the coverage, a lot of people commented on that in the Discord and on Instagram, just like we missed a lot. And again, there was a lot to cover, so I don't fully blame the broadcasters. They're doing their best with a lot of tech issues and everything, but yeah. It was too bad we didn't see more from him or hear more from him because it was a really good weekend for him. And I hope that's indicative of more to come. So least valuable player LVP for me, I think I have to give it to the tech issues and unfortunately a tough weekend for Williams. Not that they really did anything terribly wrong, but I think I'm holding them to a higher standard these days after 3 for 3 points and just... Yeah, I'm a Williams fan. I'm a big fan of both of the drivers, and I want more for them. So not that I give them the LVP because I think they were to blame in this situation, but it's just, you know, I want more from you because I know you can do it.
I agree.
Yeah. How about you?
My LVP is the call for Alex by the FIA, the lack of disqualification. I mean, the lack of track limits call for Hulkenberg on time. I just think it was one of those things that it was like a domino effect that, like you said, the Williams weekend just fell apart. And I hate to see that happen when you'd like to be able to see the full performance of a team that is just week over week really impressing beyond what you expect from them.
100%. Okay, hot takes and predictions. Did you have any predictions for this race that came true or did not come true?
You know what? I did predict that Yuki was going to be in the points this week, which I was really happy about. I just, something about it felt right. And there we are. Otherwise, I don't think I had anything that fully came together that was such a hot take. Like, generally speaking, I'm like, oh, the McLarens are going to do well. Shocker.
They keep shining. My hot take for the week was a Kimi podium, which I think he really just got screwed on strategy this weekend. He did what he could. He raced well, as he always does. And I've just been really impressed by his composure and his ability to sort of take every single track, every single car setup, and just deliver in a really promising way and low drama, and just seems to be learning the car, getting those laps, that mileage in, learning from George, who is crushing it. And so, yeah, anyway, I've really enjoyed Kimi's performance, but I'm sad that the podium did not come true. But I think, I have a feeling he'll be back. He'll be back.
I would agree. I think there's definitely a Kimi podium this season and not too far away would be my hot take.
Any other thoughts? The one other one for me was the Lewis driver of the day vote, which, look, everybody on this podcast knows I'm a massive Lewis fan, and even I was sort of confused by that vote.
The thing was, for me, I think anybody who knows me does know that Lewis is my favorite driver, but anybody on this podcast who doesn't know me, that's what you should know as we go into this conversation. Lewis is hands down, like, I will follow you into the dark type of vibes for me. But I think what the confusion came from was that he really did have a good race. He went from 9th to 5th, and it's a fair question in any normal race to have him move up into that driver of the day slot. But I think because you had so many drivers making such big moves in so many capacities, there were definitely even drivers just at the front that you could have seen get that kind of conversation. Lando moving into third and being able to take that late lunge against Charles Leclerc and the Ferraris, that was a huge deal, especially for his driver standings and being able to keep that lead even with Oscar winning the race. Ollie coming from the back all the way to the front. And I wonder how much of it was just about the fact that we didn't have coverage of everything, and if the voting would have been different if you could have seen everything.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. Anything else on the race that was top of mind?
I don't think so. I think the last thing was just Kimi's. I was going to talk about Kimi's strategy and getting caught in that DRS train, but we topped it. I think Kimi and some of the other rookies are really giving this show that we will see great work from them. And then I think my one thing for Red Bull is that everyone's talking about how bad of a race weekend this was for them, but I do think when you take into account everything that they had to deal with, these technical issues, the issues that Max was having with the brakes, the general excitement of the race itself, I actually think seeing both of them still stay in the points with pit stops that were that abysmal, both of Max's pit stops were terrible. And these technical issues were quite deep. And for both of them, and also for Yuki to take a crash or take contact with Carlos and have those issues, I think you look at it and you say, do they maybe have the driver lineup that they need if they fix the car? So that's my hot take, I guess, in terms of this race and kind of getting lost in it. I think there's a possibility that this driver lineup, if they had the right car, if we were looking at them in the Red Bull Rocket from last season, maybe this would have been a really big race for them.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think let's give Yuki a little bit of a chance here. Like, this dude just jumped into a totally new car that many would argue is very tailored to one driver. So he's doing what he can. And yeah, double points weekend for them is nothing to to smirk at. So I'm happy for them. And hopefully it will, hopefully they'll figure out the car, because I think the more teams we have up at the front, the more people we have fighting up at the front, the more exciting it is for all of us. So
keep agreed. Coming.
Okay. So for the standings, where are we at? We have Lando Norris with 77, Oscar with 74. So they are neck and neck. Max Verstappen in third with 69, George Russell 63, Charles Leclerc 32, Kimi 30, Lewis 25, Alex Albon 18, Esteban Ocon 14, and Lance Stroll 10. So those are your top 10. And now with Pierre Gasly scoring points, the only pointsless drivers now are Fernando Alonso, Liam Lawson, Jack Doohan, and Gabriel Bortoleto. So all rookies, if you count Fernando Alonso.
Oh, everyone's favorite rookie, rookie of the year.
Yes. And constructors is also pretty exciting. McLaren is really kind of pulling ahead here with 151, but then we have Mercedes 93, Red Bull 71, Ferrari 57. So the top four are actually kind of spread a bit, but if you think about a winner being 25 points in a race, and that's just one driver, like everything is within the fight here. So we have a lot more to play for. Haas has shot up with their double points to 20 points, and then Williams 19, Aston Martin 10, Racing Bulls 7, and then Alpine and Kick-Sauber are 6 each. So lots to play for.
Yes, very exciting.
Yeah.
It's always, every time we look through the points, I'm like, it's only 4 races in. Feels like we've been at this season for much longer, partially because of how exciting it's been. So
I agree. This race was so exciting, but I also was sort of like, it's interminable. It was like lap 30, and I was like, how are we still racing?
Yeah, it felt longer. It did feel longer this week, which is wild because Japan felt like it was a year and a half long of nobody doing anything. So
exactly. Well, we have Saudi coming up. So a really quick Saudi Grand Prix preview. It's the last leg of the triple header before Miami, which we'll both be at and we're very excited for. But this is a much newer race. The first Grand Prix here was only in 2021, but it has quickly become very well known due to just how fast of a track, the potential for danger given both how fast and how narrow it is. And it's also an F1 Academy race weekend. So keep an eye out for that. But for the circuit, most call it Jeddah. It's 50 laps, 6.1 kilometers, temporary street circuit with a few more permanent sections. The track has the most turns on the calendar. I think it's 27 or something. It's also the second longest after Spa. 3 DRS zones, and like we mentioned, super, super fast. It's the fastest street circuit on the calendar. The average speed can be around 250 kilometers per hour, which is average. Like, that's faster than Silverstone, just second to Monza, the temple of speed. And it is a fundamentally different track from Bahrain, so maybe expect to see different setups next weekend in Jeddah. But Marissa, do you have any hot takes or predictions for Saudi?
I think we're going to see Lando kind of shoot again. Well, like, I think he's going to return in a strong way. I think Oscar winning and his frustration is, like I said earlier, I think it has become a motivating factor for him, that threat, because I think all of last season was a conversation of, can you be good enough to catch up, versus right now it's a conversation of, do you think anyone's better than you? And I think he will respond to that hopefully well. That's my hot take.
All right. I love it. I'm going to go quite spicy with a Hamilton podium. I think Hamilton's going to come back swinging. That's why they're called hot takes.
You know what? I would like it to happen. I'm going to manifest your hot take.
Well, it's going to be great. Marissa, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for joining. It's been such a pleasure. I can't wait to see you very soon.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to see you in Miami.
Yay. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.